Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It was a dark and stormy night in the city. It always is. The name's Paulinelli. That's my partner, Belle. We have an office on the 34th floor of the Writer's Block. She had a story to tell. They always do.
Okay, whoever let me talk you into that. Harlem Nocturne for people who are aficionados of the 80s television series. That was the opening theme music for Mike Hammer with Stacey Keach. And we thought that might be a good way to bring the show in. Longtime listeners of the Writer's Block here on LA Talk Radio have already figured out this is not the delightful baritone of one Jim Christina. Jim is still writing the recovery trail out in Star, Idaho, and we want to send a big shout out to Jim and tell him to hurry up and get back in this chair. And I do promise I will vacuum up the Cheeto dust before he gets back. So I've got the controls that could be interesting. My name is Richard Paulinelli, and I've been on the show a few times, both as a co-host and a guest. And fortunately for me, we have the delightfully talented Bobby Jean Bell riding shotgun tonight. Bobby Jean, how are you doing?
Oh, I love that. I love that opening. I think we should do that every week, Richard.
Okay, we'll see.
It's so fun. And as always, it's delightful to be here with you as the author and me as the reader while we talk with our guests this evening. And you're doing okay?
I, as Jim would say, am doing finer than frog's hair. And how he knows that is a mystery I don't ever want to solve. So I think we've got enough of a mystery tonight because, as we have just found out, we have a mysterious woman who has showed up. And all we know about her is her name is Rachel. So do you have any further clues to help us solve this mystery?
I do. Our featured guest tonight, as Richard said, is Rachel Tomeo, a former 911 emergency operator and police dispatcher. And after 12 years in those dark depths, she gained a unique insight into mental illness, human behavior, and the general darkness of humanity that she weaves into her books. A formerly exclusive romance author, she tried her hand at thrillers, and in her award-winning novel, Crazy Love, she discovered that she loved it so much she decided not to turn back. Rachel writes books that stand out, are different, twisted, memorable, and in the case of this book for me, haunting. As Richard and I discovered reading her recently published title and the book we're chatting about tonight, Carnal Knowledge, a Deadly Sins novel. Her intent is that her books stick with you long after you turn the last page. Please welcome author Rachel Tomeo. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you. Thank you. That introduction was great. I absolutely loved it. Thank you. That was awesome.
You know, it's one of those things where two brain cells collide in my head and God only knows what happens after that. So
great. It couldn't have been more perfect. It was awesome.
You know, Rachel, Bobby, in reading the information about your book, she says it's a book that's going to stay with you after you have finished it. And this is definitely that book. I just want to compliment you on the ending, because that was one of the best I've read in a long time. So well done on that.
Thank you. What a great compliment. I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
So tell, I'm sorry, Bobby, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, we're going to try to not have any spoiler alerts because we want everybody to go read this book. And that's all I'm going to say now. Go back, Richard, go ahead.
Well, I thought we'd probably, since we'd give Rachel a chance to tell us a little bit about the book, because she would know best how to dodge any spoilers. And then we'll talk to you a little bit about, how the book came about and as much about the characters as we can. But for now, just kind of tell us about the book.
The book is called Carnal Knowledge. It is the second book in the Deadly Sin series. When I say the Deadly Sin series, though, each book can be read by itself. Standalone story. You could start anywhere in the series you want to. So this one is the second. It's about the sin of lust, but not lust in the sense that immediately comes to mind when you think of lust. It's more of a, in the book, I write about it as a hunger that cannot be satisfied. Now, lust can be for a lot of different things, not just necessarily sexual. So that's what we visit in Carnal Knowledge, is the sin of lust in some of its darkest forms.
Definitely do throughout this book. And you get us hooked into the story right on the first page, because the main character, the story is told in the first person. The main character is waking up, realizing that she was slipped a date rape drug. And it was like, you know, the first page and wow, here we go. We don't even get a chance to settle in and already we're into it.
I don't want to give anybody an excuse to put it down.
you didn't. I'll tell you that. How did this book come about? I mean, what was the process as far as creating the character and then laying out what happens throughout this book?
I kept coming back to the sin of lust. I originally planned on starting the series with the sin of lust, but I'm a big on my gut when I write. And it just didn't feel right. I just couldn't make it fit. It just, the story I had wasn't working. So I decided to put it on the back burner, come back to it. And I wrote Break My Bones. And then I came back to this one. And I remember the whole series was actually spawned on one of the last years I worked as a police dispatcher. I went to the 911 conference. They have this big 911 conference in Texas. It's like statewide, where they get all these people, they do an award ceremony, this conference and classes and everything. And the keynote speaker that year was Elizabeth Smart.
Oh.
And mm-hmm. I was like so blown away that I was going to hear Elizabeth Smart, because I knew what had happened to her. And I was just completely just like, you know, starstruck, if you can be starstruck by something like that. But yeah, I listened to her speech. And while I was listening to her tell her story about being kidnapped at, I think she was 14, and living in the woods for 2 months with this crazy couple and all the things they did, believe it or not, that is when the lightning struck my brain. It was when I was listening to her and I was thinking about all the things that were done to her, and you know, just that's how my brain works. It's just like I'll get random lightning strikes in the middle of odd things, and it just happens. So that's where it happened. It started with that, and then Carnal Knowledge just came to be. So.
Now, in your bio, you are you're a former 911 operator. How much of what you heard during, you know, your days doing that, did you apply to this book? Because there's a lot of detail in there that almost, I would have almost suspected you had been a police officer at one point. So did you draw on that experience as you were kind of creating what was going to be going on with the main character, whose name is Ren, by the way? I don't think we've mentioned that yet.
I think so, yeah, because I think as I get more and more comfortable in my writing, with my writing muscles and in writing thrillers, and you know, I've used a little bit more and a little bit more police procedural stuff in my books, and in this one, I wanted it to be, I really do try to make different elements in the book. I don't want it to be like, it is a serial killer book, so we haven't thrown that out yet, but it is, sort of. I don't want it to be like your typical serial killer book and your typical police department when it comes to serial killers, and detectives, and the police officers and how it's approached. And I, that's where I think I like to make it stand out, because that's part of the reason it does seem realistic, is because it's not a cookie cutter story. And every police department is different, you know, and in this one, you know, the measures that the police department does or doesn't take in order to find this person and how she reacts to it and, you know, all those things. I did draw on it because police are people, and obviously I know a lot of police officers still, even though I haven't dispatched in a couple of years now. I still know a lot of police officers, and they are just like everybody else. And I try to make them like that in the books. And yes, the police procedural stuff, I do know a lot about that.
Yeah, for a crime, for a suspense thriller, you went the route of telling the story in the first person from the main character who is the victim in this case. That's a little different for a police procedural type of book. Why did you decide to go first person with this?
I always write first person.
Okay.
I find it in every book that I've written first person. I find it the easiest way for me to draw the reader so far in that they're just like in the story. Because it's harder for me, and other writers are much better at writing in, you know, third person past or whatever. I write first person present tense. So you're there in that moment with that character. I find it easier that way. And I think it sucks the reader in more when it's written that way. So that's why I write it like that.
I have a question, a quick question, since we're on that subject. I think one of the things that I found interesting in your book is we have a small cast of characters, and generally speaking, as a reader, I love to see characters be developed as a book goes along, and that they're different at the end than maybe they were at the beginning. And I have a sense that you agree with that sort of premise as a writer. But when you're writing first person, is it more difficult to have the other characters develop? Or do you just concentrate on having the main character, you know, change as we go through the story as seen through their eyes? Does that question make sense?
Yes, it does. I totally understand it. And honestly, this is the first book that I've ever written that was from one singular point of view. In all of my other books, all of them, the romances, the thrillers, every single one of them, I've written from more than one point of view. Crazy Love is written from three points of view.
Uh-huh.
So in that sense, you know, I jump from one character to the other throughout the story. It's easier when I'm in their head, so to speak, as I'm writing the character, to have them react however or they react and grow, and how their personality changes throughout the story. It was sort of a challenge. I've had several people say, you're great with your different points of view. The transfers between the scenes and the characters are seamless, but we really would like to see what you can do with just one character. Mm-hmm. And I thought of that. And honestly, when I was trying to write Carnal Knowledge, I could not possibly come up with a way to write from a different point of view without giving away the end. I knew how I wanted it to end, but I couldn't come up with a way to do it. So I decided this is the one. I'm just going to write this from the one character, the one perspective, and run with it.
When you say that you sort of knew, you did kind of know where your ending was going to be. This is about a serial killer. So I'm not giving anything away that there are going to be some characters that aren't going to make it to the end. What is it like as a writer to decide who's not going to make it? And how do you feel about them? What do you feel for them as you decide they're not going to make it out?
I you know, the funny thing with this one is when I have authors that I'm friends with that I'll go to with this scene or that scene. I'm like, I'm stuck. Help me. You know, we'll bounce ideas off each other and things. One of the characters. I was struggling with the scene, and she actually told me, she says, well, I hate to tell you this, but I think that person's going to have to die.
Yeah.
She told me.
Just and take them like, out.
Huh? Oh, wait. I think you're right. That was the solution to the problem.
That's funny.
That's how that came to be. So I was like, oh, that's perfect. That's great. And then my mind just goes 90 miles an hour, filling in all the holes and the blanks. And, you know, I've not ever written a book where a lot of people died or anybody actually. Well, no, I take that back. But for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, because you're in the first person and we're kind of going along mm-hmm. with Ren as she's going through this. And this serial killer is able to get to her no matter what she does to protect herself.
Right.
You kind of build up the tension and the suspense and the drama. And at the same time, you're introducing us to all these characters and you're dropping these clues mm-hmm. as to who it could be or who it might not be. How hard was it to balance that? Where if you're not going to come out and tell the reader who it is, and they're going to have to find out with the character to give enough information so that at the reveal, it's believable, it's still a surprise, and you don't give away too much too soon so that people go, yeah, I figured that out back about six chapters ago.
Right. I think part of it is my own learning process from my history as far as what I've written and feedback and things that people have given me and then drafts that I write and throw away and, you know, rewrite over. And I think I drafted this book three or four times before I got it just how I wanted it. My mind just went completely blank.
It happens. I went off one night on the show and I still don't know where I was going with the question. So don't worry about it.
Maybe this would be a chance to take a break. Should we take a break right now, Rachel? We know that you work with Creative Edge and Sam, if you're listening, why don't we hear a little bit about Creative Edge publicity? Or not.
we may have jumped the gun on Sam here.
We may have. Rachel, do you want to chat a moment about Creative Edge? Maybe just even how you found them or they found you?
Wait a minute. Never mind.
You know, when Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. No. They work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals and needs. So Creative Edge, it's your brand and your future. Mickey Mickelson, publicist, www.creative-edge.com. Dot services.
And we're so delighted they're one of the sponsors of the show, and we are so grateful to Creative Edge Publicity. And I guess you may have started to answer that, Rachel. You want to just take a moment and maybe just talk a little bit about your relationship with Creative Edge?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I got to the point, and I've written, I believe, 8 books now that are published, and I realized that, you know, I was only going to get so far without a publicist. So I reached out on Facebook, actually. I think I saw them on somebody else's. I have, you know, a couple hundred mm-hmm. authors mm-hmm. probably, at least on my Facebook friends list. And I reached out to him, and he answered me, and we just talked it out, and it was just perfect. It was just exactly what I needed, and I've been with them for... I actually just started with him back in July, and he's been great, honestly, perfect, just what I needed.
Wonderful.
Yeah, that's kind of a big thing for authors, and I think whether you're traditionally published or you're indie published, is that you've got to have help to get the word out.
Yeah, definitely. You can only go so far on your own, really. You've got to eventually find somebody with the connections.
Mm-hmm. So let's see. We can get back to the book or process. Richard, I'll throw it back to you.
Well,
get us going again.
I have been sitting here all night and in the 2 hours before we went live, trying to figure out how to talk about that ending without giving the whole thing away. I will say this. It is... If anybody comes up and says that they figured it out and it didn't surprise them, they're a stone cold liar, because there is no way you can read that ending and go, yeah, I figured that one. I saw that. Yeah. It's an amazing ending, and it was so well crafted that even though I at one point had the actual killer as a suspect on my list, I had disregarded that character based on some of the clues that you had dropped earlier. But yeah. At the same time, once the reveal comes in and you see the whole picture, those clues take on a completely different meaning. And it was just perfectly done.
Thank you very much.
The combination of clues and then action, like, you know, we kind of get the reveal and then it sort of goes on. I don't think I breathed. I think I didn't breathe like the last, I don't know, however many pages, because I like my eyes, if somebody had been watching me, I think they got wider open. If there's possible, they got bigger and bigger and bigger. And at one point I really let out a gasp where my husband said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Don't bother me now."
Right.
Yeah. Jen.
I love those endings, those shocking, surprising, oh my God, what just happened endings. When I read books, I absolutely love them. Yeah. They're my favorite. And they're not easy to find.
No, they're not. They're not. Now, you said the books in the series can be read as standalones. So yeah. I'm assuming we're not going to get visit Ren's life any further, because I think she's got enough issues to deal with. I don't think you should pick on her anymore.
Right. Yeah, I think she's done. She can go heal now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was wondering, what else are you going to do to this poor child? It was just one you know, hammer blow after another, and it set the stage for the story, of course, but I don't know how many people would withstand that.
Right. And that was, you know, as far as her character growth, you know, she'd already been through a few things when the story started, with her separation from her husband and his infidelity and not, you know, him still not owning up to it and all those things. And then all this dropping on her, she was forced, you know, to either go down with the ship or fight. You know, she had to choose one or the other, and she was forced to grow.
Well, you write a wonderful cat and mouse game that surprises the reader. It's like I'll be reading along and then go, oh, we're in it. Oh, it's a cat and mouse game again.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, as far as y'all were talking about how it built up to the end and how there's a lot of things throughout the story that I was writing and I'm like, is this gonna feel like a, does it quite make sense, you know, does it fit in, it doesn't go, why is it like this, you know? Mm-hmm. And then at the end, when the reveal happens and the whole thing is explained, it like all fits together.
Right.
So perfectly. It explains everything. And it came out layered like that. I have to say, I think it's probably to date the best ending I've done. It really is. I don't know if I could top it.
I was just going to say, how are you going to top it? Plus, we're going to be expecting this from you. So as readers, yeah. I noticed that one thing about your characters too, even though we're seeing them through her eyes, you do write flawed characters, and I sometimes, you know, we read a book a week for the show, and we always enjoy every book we read. But some are, you know, I think do a better job at three-dimensional characters and depth of character. And your characters, they all have flaws.
Yeah, well, I mean, we all do have flaws. And I feel that readers can't connect to a perfect character because we're not perfect. You know, even on our best day, we all have something going on, something bothering us, some issue, things happen, you know, it's just life. So in order to create characters that the reader can actually connect with and feel and judge them or get mad at them and, you know, invoke all these emotions in the person reading the book, the character has to make mistakes, you know, they have to make choices and be not perfect.
Do you create for yourself as a writer a little profile or backstory or whatever for each character? Do you keep sort of track of detail ideas so that you can bring those in? Do you do any of that when you're creating your characters?
Not really, no. I'm kind of a fly by the seat of my pants kind of writer. I'll leave notes like in my drafts when I'm actually writing. A lot of the times on like the first page or first few pages of my manuscript, I'll like have notes there for my character, like how old they are, what their birthday was, whatever. You know, I will have that sometimes so I can remember as I go through and flip back. But as far as
finish that thought. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. As far as the rest, not really. I don't get too deep into the backstory because I don't know why. I just don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there was a point that Bobby brought out when she and I were talking about this week's book, and I wanted to bring it up in the show because you reminded me when you said no, people aren't perfect and our characters shouldn't be either. The very first introduction to Wren that we get is in the aftermath of her being drugged, and she chooses not to call the police afterwards. Mm-hmm. And Bobby had asked me, is that normal? And, you know, going back to my newspaper days and reading police logs and whatnot, I don't know that it's normal, but it's not unheard of. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would say it's probably more common than people think. But that mentality of her or whoever, you know, but as far as her, like, I set my drink down and I shouldn't have. I've been told and told and told not to set my drink down. So it's kind of my fault or just, you know, you're raising yourself into all these things because I don't know if it's just human nature or what we're conditioned to do. I don't know, but that's what I went with for her because she's young and she's been going through some things and she doesn't want to be embarrassed because she's already in trouble because she's separated from her husband. She's on probation for DWI. And she should have been out drinking in the first place, you know. So there's that too. I think she just does what a lot of people would do and just kind of forget about it, you know, just pretend it never happened because it's easier.
Yeah. And she's about to do it again. The second incident.
Yeah.
Had it not been for fate intervening, she probably wouldn't have had the second time around. And that's something that I had noticed and Bobby had noticed, and we just kind of wanted to see based on your experience if that's you know if that does happen, and apparently it does.
Yeah, I would say yes it does. But yeah, a lot of those things the police don't hear about it until either because like say a parent finds out or you know things like that. Because it's easier sometimes just not to say anything, you know.
Yeah. Shall we take a break right here? Richard, you want to tell us a little bit about Tuscany Bay Books?
Yeah, we've got a little bit of news over at Tuscany Bay I want to share with everybody. Tuscany Bay Books announces the upcoming release this Tuesday of the seventh book of its epic 11-book planetary anthology series. Tuesday, August 18th, Mars joins its brother and sister planets in the series, and it features 20 short stories written by science fiction and fantasy masters and Dragon Award winners Kevin J. Anderson of Dune fame and Chuck Dixon, as well as Dragon Award finalist Declan Finn and Lou Antonelli, along with several other up-and-coming writers that you will definitely be reading for many years to come. The entire series itself features over 180 stories written by 90 different authors, including legendary writer John C. Wright, Jody Lynn Nye, Arlen Andrews, and fellow Dragon Award finalist Jaji Lamplighter, and some talentless hack named Richard Polinelli somehow got into the series. You can pre-order your copy on Kindle today, and you can also order your print edition and hope that Amazon and the United States Postal Service can get it to you sometime before the end of the year by checking out our website at www.tuscanybaybooks.com or on Amazon, where you can order your Kindle copy. And if you happen to be an author who is looking to start your publishing career and you need a little help, just reach out to Tuscany Bay Books and let's see what we can do for you. Fill out the contact form on the website and we will be in touch as soon as we can. That's at TuscanyBayBooks.com. And Rachel, it is time for us to put you to the question. So okay. Here you are. Prepare yourself. The Inquisitors are ready for your answer. Do you ever suffer from that cursed affliction known as writer's block? And if you do, whatever do you do to drive away the scourge of all scribes around the world?
Yes, I do from time to time suffer from writer's block, sometimes in the middle of a book, sometimes after I've completed a book. I just recently went through a bout of writer's block. I haven't written anything in like 2 or 3 months now. I just started the fourth book in the series like 3 weeks ago. It's very frustrating. It is very frustrating, and there's not much you can do with it. What helps me some is I pick up other books in the genre that I write in and read them. You know, sometimes it kind of helps loosen everything up. Sometimes you just need a break too.
Yeah.
With everything going on, you know, it's with, you know, COVID and quarantine and just everything's just so crazy right now. Sometimes you just need to give your mind a break. And I'd say it's okay. You know, no, there's a lot of that, you know, if you're a writer, you should write every day to keep, you know, yourself fresh. Well, you don't have to, you know, you don't really don't. You can take a break. You can walk away from it for a little bit and you'll come back better because you rested. Mm-hmm. So I think it's okay to just let it be for a little while. But that doesn't mean it's not frustrating. It was frustrating for me because I kept trying to start books and nothing was like coming out.
Yeah. I think a lot of writers go through it. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any right or wrong way to deal with it. You know, like you said, you like to read a lot, and that's something every author should be doing anyway, but you know, just do find what works for you and use it, and then you'll probably be fine. I don't think we ever had anybody who's just hauled off and said, no, I don't ever get it and I don't worry about it, Bobby Jean?
Other than John Sanford, that he writes on a deadline. And then he also told us, you know, he doesn't ever get block, but if he's sort of in the corner, he just introduces a character with a gun and then he's off and running again.
Yeah.
But he's the only one that immediately comes to mind.
Yeah. Well, John Sanford, if you've ever walked through an airport, you have probably seen at least, what, 5, 6, or 7 of his books sitting in the thing. So, yeah, we'll cut him some slack on that one.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. You're a contributor to a magazine I was not familiar with in detail. It's a fascinating magazine. I read a great article about Tosca Lee, who's been on our show, and some other authors. So you're doing a little bit of magazine writing. How did that all come about?
Actually, I want to say my publisher has suggested it because I'm with Tangled Tree Publishing now. And one of the things they have suggested we do is reach out to magazines and things like that to write articles. I've never written an article before, so I'm like, I have no idea what to write about. So I got to thinking about it, and I found In Detail magazine, and I figured I'd write what I know best and about writing. So,
yeah, and the links to the two of the articles, the links for our listeners are on your website, and I found really interesting. Plus, I learned about a magazine I didn't I hate to admit it, but I didn't know about. One of your articles was about dealing with reading reviews. And we talk about that sometimes on the show, probably not consistently enough. Do you want to share a little bit about your, do you read your reviews and what are your thoughts about reviews?
I do read my reviews. My thoughts are every author, every single one gets bad reviews. All of them. You can look Stephen King, John Grisham, Suzanne Collins, any of them, you know, and like a certain chunk of their reviews are all going to be bad. It's in my opinion, and an author that has nothing but good reviews, I think your readers don't, it may be subconscious, I think, even knowing that there are lots of ways to pay for reviews, to fake reviews, and Amazon finds people that give fake reviews and they kick them off all the time. But when you have bad reviews, I think it should almost be like a badge of honor, because that person, first of all, read your book all the way through. Okay. Second, you invoked enough emotion in them to that would take them. Too bad review makes all the other reviews look even better. Because it's a real, people are reading it. You're not just begging your friends to write reviews for you. These are just people that read it and they had emotions and they wrote a review. So a bad review isn't necessarily a bad thing. But on the other hand of that, if all you get are bad reviews, maybe you need to revisit something. Yeah. But if you get one here and there, you know, I think in the article I put the percentages. I did the math on a few.
Yeah, you did. It's fascinating.
Like 10, 15, 20%, you know, like yeah. Stephen King reviews for like the Institute, I think it was, you know, are bad. You know, I read the Institute. I'm like, it's not like a lot of his books, but it wasn't, you know, I didn't think it was bad. I mean, it's Stephen King. I mean, you know, but 20% of the people that read it or however, whatever it was, I can't remember, they disagreed.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's one of the best authors in the world.
You know, the one thing that I do with bad reviews, quote unquote bad reviews, is if it's a review where obviously the person read the book, that's one thing. And I'll read it and try to figure out what maybe they didn't like about it and see, you know, was there something I could have done a little different for the next story. The only bad reviews that annoy me are the ones when it's clearly the person never read the book. Don't have a clue what they're talking about, but you did or said something somewhere online, and by golly, they're going to let you have it and get back at you for it. Those are really the only ones that bother me at all, because it's not an honest review.
Right. And there's also reviews, too, of people that just didn't get it, you know?
Yeah.
The book wasn't really for them, you know? You can't really make everybody happy, and I don't expect in any way for everybody to like the book, because it's a dark psychological thriller. Not everybody can handle it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's okay. And it's just some people read it and they don't get it, and then they consider it a bad book because it just didn't click with them, you know?
Yeah. Well, this is definitely not a book that you want to read before you go to sleep at night.
At least not the first chapter.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't really get that much better, but
no, but you kind of get in that world. And I thought that maybe this would be a book I would always have to read during the day. And then I found that, I get where we're going. I can read this before my head hits the pillow, except that it's just so gripping that it's hard to, you don't really want to put it down. And so then you might be reading until, you know, 3 or 4 in the morning or something.
I love hearing that, because as a writer, you're writing it and you're reading it and you're writing it and you're reading it over and over and over. It completely loses its effect on you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know if it's scary, is it suspenseful, is it just weird? You know, you don't even know anymore, because you just, you're cross-eyed from looking at it. So when the readers come back and say that, you know, they couldn't put it down, I was up all night, I couldn't go to sleep, I'm scared now, or, you know, you're great.
this book was released in July, right, of this year, 2020. I'm sure that it was that you knew much earlier in the year about when it would be released, and probably without knowing the pandemic was going to put this blanket over everything. How have you been dealing with the release of a book during this time?
It's been different. When I released Break My Bones in October of 2019, I did a lot of book signings and, you know, things like that. This time I obviously can't do that. There's no book signings. So I've been doing interviews, a lot of interviews since July. But it did change it. There's no in-person anything, you know. Mm-hmm. If anybody reached out to me and they wanted a signed copy, I would do my best to make it happen. But, you know, there's no me sitting at Barnes & Noble signing books.
Right. Know. No festivals, no gatherings. Do you belong to any author groups?
Not really. I've looked at the International Thriller Writers. I've looked at that one a couple of times. Mm-hmm. I just haven't taken a step to join up.
Yeah. Okay, Richard, back to you. Got another question?
You guys were rolling right along. I was just going to sit back and let you just.
No. I'm crossing my questions off my list here. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just follow up on not being able to go out and meet people in person, because that is a big way for an author to build up readership, is to go to the book signings, to go to, for, you know, me being science fiction, all of our science fiction conventions and comic cons were gone, zapped, and you can't go out and meet people. I had all this material printed up before COVID broke out so we could promote the Planetary series I mentioned earlier, and all that stuff sitting in a pile in the corner because I can't take it anywhere. So it's kind of forcing writers to try to find other ways to reach out, and, you know, shows like this, doing interviews, going on writers' blogs. I mean, just anything we can do to get out there and interact with readers. And I know I'm trying to get readers out there to follow me and ask a question, ask me anything you want to, just, you know, talk to me so I can interact with people again. So it's really a strange time to be a writer.
Yeah, it is. It, you know, the writing industry, I don't think it's been hit as hard as some of the others, because people are sitting at home with nothing to do. So they're reading a little bit more than they would have.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, we definitely reach out to your authors and tell them, you know, I read this, it's great. Write them a letter, email them, find them on Facebook or whatever, because yeah, we're just like everybody else. We're just kind of sitting here waiting for everything to pass.
Yeah, and as I tell everybody, good, bad, indifferent, one star or five star, yeah, I don't care. But if you read my book, I would love to hear what you thought about it.
Right, and, exactly.
And you won't hurt my feelings, because trust me, I've gotten some good reviews in my day.
Right. I've thrown whole books in the trash. So yeah, I've written like 8-9 books now. So I'm like, you know, whatever you want to throw at me, I can take it. So
yep.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Would you say, because you did share that you would always wanted to write, you'd kind of kept it quiet, your husband didn't even really know, and you started writing a little bit later in life. Would you say that since you went ahead and put pen to paper, it's been a slow process, a happy process, a lucky process? What's your road been like?
I think part of it has been luck. It went along faster than I actually expected it to. I wrote for years as a child, and then I as a teenager, and then I stopped, and life happened and got married. Yeah, and my husband had no clue that I was ever a writer, that I loved to write. But I was, let's say, 37, and I was on night shift at the police department, and I decided I was going to write this book, and I was going to take it seriously. And I found a website called Critique Circle. Mm-hmm. And that website is actually really what pushed me, because it's an invaluable tool for somebody an author that is new, that's never wanted, that's been scared to let anybody read their writing, is we all start out that way, you know? Because on this website is basically you post chapter for chapter of your book, and other writers, other people just like you, go through your book and critique it. You know, you don't have to take it with a grain of salt, because there are mean people and they're just like anywhere else. But yeah, for the most part, you know, they'll tell you, this is what you're doing wrong here. This is great. This is bad. And I use the advice. And I met another author who was just great, and she helped me quite a bit. And I took her advice to heart, and I started submitting the books to agents at first, because I wasn't sure what to do. Mm-hmm. And as agents came back to me and said, I like it, but I like mm-hmm. it, but, mm-hmm. and then I heard another author that had said she had an agent and she wishes she'd known, she knows now. So she said, if I'd known what I know now, I would say, skip the agent and just go straight to the publisher. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's what I tried. And I found the first publisher I had, the Solstice Publishing, and then Love Solstice Publishing and Tangled Tree Publishing that picked me up, and the rest, I couldn't believe the first time they said, we love it, it's great, we want to send you a contract.
You
like,
must have been jumping
real?
Up and down.
Is this like a joke? Is it spam?
Happy dance.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I was completely blown away.
How many times did you reread the email?
Oh my God, so many times. I probably still have it somewhere.
I'm sure. Framed. Let's let's take a break right here. And Sam, we'd love to hear about LA Talk Radio.
Hi, Jim Christina, your host for The Writer's Block, right here on LA Talk Radio. And this is just a reminder that while everybody's locked down with this COVID-19, working from home, getting bored, you do have an option, and that option is to go to www.latalkradio.com. See, as a .com, we've got it all, from music, sports, self-help. Hell, we even have talk. So why don't you tune in during the day while you're working and listen to what our great hosts and great shows have to say. And just a reminder, Thursday night, 7 p.m. Pacific, is the Writer's Block, brought to you by LA Talk Radio. So have yourselves a great time, stay safe out there, and remember, latalkradio.com.
You know, we need to get Jim back in the recording studio and fix the time, because it's now 6:00 Pacific.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we are on a new time, our second week on a new time. Richard, do you have a last question for Rachel before we begin to close up the show?
Yeah, well, just as a follow-up on what we were talking about before we went to the break, the one thing that I encourage all authors who are just starting to develop and develop quickly is a very thick skin, because if you try to do this with a thin skin for your entire career, it's not going to go well. You've got to let some stuff bounce off and not react to it and not get distracted by it. And I would second the point about just going straight to the publisher. If you want to do the traditional publishing route, there are so many small publishing houses that are almost independent, but not quite. They still do the traditional style. Take your work to them, because with the big ones, if you're starting out, unless you get incredibly lucky, most of your stuff is going to be thrown in a pile and probably never read. So those were two things I just wanted to follow up on, is that mm-hmm. that maybe go the traditional publishing route by just skipping the agent step, and you might have a little bit more success.
Rachel, do you want to let our listeners know where they can find out more about you?
Yeah, I have a website, racheltamayowrites.com. I have a blog. I do book reviews on there. You can find out about all my books, links to my interviews. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. You can find my books pretty much anywhere. But yeah, you can find me on the website. You can hit me up, send me an email. There's a contact form on there, and I'll answer.
That's great. Well, we really had so much fun having you with us tonight. And I know Richard and I we agree that we were very happy to read your book. And we were looking forward to chatting with you tonight. Let me just say, next week, August 20th, we welcome New York Times and internationally bestselling author Steve Barry about his new book, the Warsaw Protocol, Warsaw Protocol. And I believe next week, Richard, it'll be you with Russ in the on the airwaves. Yes.
Yeah. The R&R gang will ride again.
So thank you both for being with us tonight. And again, we say a howdy to Jim and to our bookie, Jerry Christina, that keeps things running smoothly. And in the words of our fearless founder and host, Jim Christina, we are out of here. See you next week.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.